This episode of The Line is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek.fm at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type B-A-B-E-L into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Casey King. I play Icheb on Star Trek Picard, and you're listening to The Line on Trek FM.
Welcome to The Line, Trek FM's podcast dedicated to Star Trek Picard. I'm Chrissy DeClercq-Zalagi. Brandon is away this week, but joined with me today is my co-host, Justin Ozer. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Yeah, it's a shame Brandon couldn't be here because of a scheduling conflict, but it's great to see you. And now that we don't have the episodes coming out each week, it's coming out a little bit less often, but we still are trying to put some content out there, some interviews like we have today. So that's exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And it's a little more relaxed. We don't have to,
to rush it out in a couple days.
Yeah, so...
For sure.
Today on The Line, we have a special guest, Casey King, who played Icheb in the Star Trek Picard episode Stardust City Rag. Casey, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's greatly appreciated that you took the time to speak with us today. Thanks. So for our interview today, we have our own questions, but we also have some from our Facebook listeners group, the Babel Conference. But we'll start with what is probably the standard question in these interviews. How did you get your start in acting?
Oh, that is that's quite a long story, but I guess I could just start right from the beginning.
Got time.
I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Very proud of that, and I got into it and acting at a young age. I did commercials and small independent films out of Pittsburgh. My mother got me into that. She's a very arts driven person. And she had four boys and tried to get them all into the arts, and I was the only one that kind of stuck with it. And so I was doing commercials, theater, independent films in Pittsburgh growing up. And then I sort of shifted away from that and played sports growing up. And I actually went to college for football. I got recruited to play at a small school in Minnesota called St. Olaf College. And so I'd shifted away from acting, and I went to college as a pre-med, which fizzled out after the first year. Chemistry was pretty hard for me. So I switched my major to English for my second year, and I ended up in an acting class as an elective, and I fell all in love with acting over it again. And it was my sophomore year, and I was playing football. I just had my third concussion.
Oh.
And I was like, I have to start thinking about the rest of my life. Probably not going to make it to the NFL. So I ended up leaving school after my sophomore year. And after a long, long chat with my mother on deciding what I wanted to do with my life, she supported me on moving out to Los Angeles to start a career in acting. And the first 3 years out here was pretty hard, starved quite a bit, but, booked a job in a very, very obscure movie, that plays on Sci-Fi Channel at 3 o'clock in the morning, which was, the start. It was a movie called Two Headed Shark Attack.
Yes.
And that was,
sounds like a classic.
Yep. I was in that movie, and, I got eaten by the shark, and, yeah.
Oh, no.
Yep. That was the start of the whole career, and sort of started booking bigger and bigger jobs after that, and ended up on Star Trek Picard, which I have to tell you has been a dream come true to book a job like Star Trek. So, yeah.
Awesome.
Excellent. Yeah. So I guess following up on that, two parts to follow up on that. We do have a question from the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook, from listener Casey Pettit. So And I'll add to that. I'm curious about what the casting process was like for the role of Icheb.
Yeah.
But then also, Casey asked, when you auditioned, did you know anything about the scene you'd actually be appearing in? For example, very gory death scene, screaming and crying, that kind of thing. Like, how do you audition for a scene like that, if you know that's what it was?
Yeah, okay. So the whole process of actually getting the job was pretty cool. I got a call one day from my manager saying, you know, there's this audition coming in. It's called, it was called The Drawing Room was the title that they were putting it under.
Oh.
And she was like, it's called The Drawing Room. And it's for this, you know, you have to play a young soldier. And I was like, oh, okay, I can do that. You know, I can do that. And she says, but it's not really called The Drawing Room. she's like, I have an inkling. It's Star Trek. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, I'm thinking it's Star Trek Discovery, you know, because that's already out. You know, I go to this audition and the character's name, it's not Icheb. It's a very common name. It was like Brian or something. Mm-hmm. So I think I'm playing a character called like Brian, and the casting director, she tells me, oh, so this is you're a person who you love. You're being chased by these soldiers and they're going to do bad things to you. And you're just telling her to get out. And that's basically what the scene was. I didn't know it was going to be so gory in the very end of it. But yeah, so once I got out of there, I found out that I got the part that very day that I auditioned. My agent, manager all put me on a conference call saying that I got this part and that it was Star Trek and everything. But it's still, you know, don't tell anybody because you have to sign all these NDAs and everything. And it didn't say, even when I went in to shoot, the call sheet didn't even say Star Trek. It was called Royal Flush was the title that they were going under. And on the call sheet, Jerry Ryan's name, it wasn't Jerry Ryan. They were still having that under wraps. It was like her name on the call sheet was a character she played in another movie. And I was like, who is this person? So they didn't even, they did not want anyone like revealing anything. So I had to sign probably like 3 NDAs and they, you know, took my phone when I walked out the set and everything. They were being very careful of letting something, you know, spoil.
I mean, and I think they did a great job because I think no one knew that Icheb, who had been a previous character, would be until we actually saw the episode. So they kept that under wraps really well.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even like leading up to it, I shot this, I had to wait 8 months, I think, before it came out. Seeing this.
Wow.
So that 8 months, I mean, you know, the first preview for Picard came out like, I think a month after I shot. So it was essentially 7 months. I had just like looking on and seeing what everyone's saying about these. And then like a hashtag bring back Icheb came up and I saw like everyone and that whole thing. And I'm just sitting there just reading some of these and it was just, I can't say anything. And, it was really cool to see. And, you know, I did a lot of research on the character Icheb. I mean, I went into it. I have to admit, I wasn't a huge Star Trek person growing up. A lot of people have gotten into Star Trek because of their parents. I think I have to say my dad wasn't a big Star Trek guy, but I, you know, I knew who Picard was growing up because I mean, it's the bald captain. And for me, that was, and whenever, Patrick Stewart got cast as Professor X in X-Men, I was, you know, that like I followed the X-Men, campaign so closely and I was a big fan of him as an actor. So going to see other work that he did, I sort of got, you know, involved in the Star Trek, universe that way. And then, when I was being cast as the character Icheb and I was going in for the fitting, I knew that I had to do research, on my own of this character. He was a very important character, though he was really small and he has a whole, fandom page dedicated to him. So that really helped out. And, able to go on Amazon Prime and watch all of the Voyager episodes that he was in.
Of course.
You know, really, really did. Well, I learned who Icheb was. So, yeah.
Okay, great. I actually have a follow-up and might as well ask this question because it's probably on some listeners' minds. Mm-hmm. So if you went back and you watched Icheb, who was in some Voyager, I don't know how many it was, maybe 6 or 7 yeah. episodes or something like that. But was fairly prominent in the later seasons of Voyager. Mm-hmm. And he was played by an actor named Manu Itarami, mm-hmm. Who in more recent years has made some controversial comments that has, and I don't know if you're aware of this, but that has kind of put off a lot of Star Trek fans on him personally, right. Not necessarily on the character. But were you aware of any of that?
I wasn't aware of, when I first got cast, I wasn't aware of mm-hmm. any thing of this sort. I sort of, like, when the whole hashtag bring back Icheb came out, I sort of, like, you know, I looked sort of into it and I saw what everyone was sort of, you know, talking about, and you know, that happens. I don't, you know, think I could put in the comment anything about it. I mean, just
no, yeah. I'm not looking for you to comment on it. I just want curious if you're
yeah.
aware of it,
yeah,
because that was in a lot of yeah. People's minds when they saw the episode and that Icheb was in it, and they were like, oh, that's
right.
Yeah, and it just brought up all those thoughts. Yeah.
What I sort of thought, thinking of casting, is like, I mean, I'm going to do a job if I'm asked to do a job. For me, I think it's, you know, what it says in the beginning of the episode, you know, 13 years ago, which is probably yeah. 7 years after Voyager, if I'm getting my timeline correct, which means if each of
well, let's think about that. I think, yes, close. Something like that, seven yeah. 8 years or so. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking, you know, each of, if he's, you know, 17 years old in Voyager, 16, 17 years old in Voyager, he's probably mm-hmm. in his mid 20s in that scene. So yeah, I would say I'm playing an older Icheb, but not a current year Icheb. Yeah.
That works. Right. Well, we had another question from the Babel Conference from one of our listeners, and forgive me because I'm sure I'm mispronouncing this when you're listening, who asked the question. Hakur Gudmundsson?
I think that's about right. I've heard podcasts
oh,
with him.
Okay.
I think
well, right. I didn't mean to make a thing of it, but I just... Yeah. Yeah.
That's okay.
Right. So they asked, does he have any concerns and or hopes about either portraying Icheb and or being on Star Trek?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if a franchise like Star Trek comes knocking on the door, obviously you can't turn that down.
Oh yeah.
So I mean, with a big name like that, that's and just the classic, how classic Star Trek is. You know, you go back to the 60s with the mm-hmm. original series and how amazing all of this, you know, how long this name has withstood, you know, that's amazing to be, you know, be a part of such an amazing franchise and the hopes of moving forward. I mean, if Icheb ever has a flashback with Seven of Nine, I'd love to be a part of it, you know?
Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think one thing that people find out when they're in Star Trek is basically, it's not like a role, like it just kind of comes and goes and people talk about it a little bit. People will be talking about this for a
yes.
long time.
Yeah.
So yeah. I wonder if you were kind of aware of that when you were cast and you knew it was Star Trek, like I'm probably going to be talking about this and people will be asking me about it for a long time.
You know, I when I first got cast at Star Trek, I was sitting in my acting class and a friend of mine in my class came up to me and he's like, "Hey, you probably get to go to Comic-Con for free now." And I was like, "Hey, that's probably very true." So, you know, if that's a plus of it, you know, that's pretty cool.
I like that.
Yeah, and I have to ask you as well, because for the episode that you were in, Stardust City Rag, that was directed by Jonathan Frakes,
yep.
who's, you know, a legend. As Riker in The Next Generation.
Absolutely.
And has also directed numerous series from the Next Generation mm-hmm. all the way up to Picard.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious, you know, for the part that you were in that episode, what was it like working with Jonathan Frakes as a director?
Okay, so that was pretty cool. I think, so I was only on set for a day when I shot this episode. I mean, I did, you know, okay. when they got my makeup and everything, I had to go to separate locations to get my head cast and everything. But I came to set at 5:30 in the morning, was my call time to get my makeup put on. And, you know, after getting all that put on and driven down the set and everything, I show up and walk out into this Borg chop shop. And, you know, I see how everything's decorated. And around the corner comes this striking, big, tall man with a wonderful beard, and he's just exuding confidence and just a person that you want to be around. And he comes up and he's like, "Hi, Casey, good to meet you, Jonathan." And he grabs my hand and shakes, and just the warmest person you could probably ever meet. And you know, the way we shot the scene is he kind of mapped out how everything was going to go. So he's like, "Casey, why don't you hop up on the table right here?" I lay down on the table and he puts the drawing board right over my chest, and like everyone's gathered around. And that's just the type of way he works. I mean, he's just like a guy that you want to work with. So, and it's funny because he had a sign right on his director's chair that said, Picard Riker 2020, like a presidential campaign.
Nice.
Sign.
Oh, nice.
So that was really cool to see. But he was a delight to work with. Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we've heard that it's just amazing working with him as a director. And I think it's wonderful he's gotten to direct so many series all the way up to Picard. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's wonderful to hear.
Yeah.
But really it was only a day for that scene. That's what it took.
Yeah. 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 And the morning was the torturing part. So I think I got to set it like at 8 o'clock. And we shot from 8 o'clock to about noon. Of just me screaming my head off. And
must have been an intense morning.
Yeah. I mean, my voice is pretty gone by the end of it, which, you know, worked because each of us was supposed to be, you know, drained by the end of it. So, it was really cool. And then meeting Jerry was also, you know, such a pleasure. Starstruck, you know, right when I saw her.
Yeah, so I'm curious, and before we started recording here, you said that you listened to the interview that we did with Evan Evagor. Yeah. He was talking about working with Jerry Ryan. It was just so much fun. Mm-hmm. They were laughing a lot. Like, so what was it like working with her and, you know, being on the set with Jerry Ryan?
Yeah, so again, I'll tell you, when I first met Jerry, you know, I showed up the set pretty nervous, you know, because they had already shot, I think this was the fifth episode. So they had already shot a few episodes. And I mean, Jerry was, you know, worked on Star Trek Voyager and, you know, such a classic character that I knew I was going to meet her, and I was really nervous, and I, you know, prepared myself and, you know, sort of auditioned in front of the mirror what I was going to say to her when I first met her.
Aww.
And it was right after I was screaming my head off. So like my brain was kind of mush, and I'm like, okay, I walk up, shake her hand. She goes, "Hi, Jerry. Nice to meet you." And I go, "Hi, Terry. Nice to meet you." So I called her Terry, and she looks at me and she goes, "Jerry." And I go, and I'm just like, oh, and like in the back of my mind, I'm like, "You idiot, Casey, you screwed it up." Like, I spent all night preparing it and I screwed up saying hi to Jerry Ryan. So yeah, but it, you know, that passed, and we got to chat and got to know each other. Yeah.
It was
a lot of fun. And, get that I mean, we nice. Worked with each other for a day, but just finding that emotional connection. I mean, I could see it in her eye that, you know, she wasn't looking at me, Casey. She was looking at the character Ichab and this person that she built this relationship, you know, over the time of shooting Voyager and being that sort of character. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah.
So our next question from the Babel Conference is from Michael Bentley. And he says, "It was a very powerfully acted scene, both from him and Jerry Ryan. Did you receive any personal backlash on social media, either because he wasn't the original actor or because Ichab suffered such a brutal end? Did the trolls come after you?"
Yeah, you know, you can't let that bother you. Like I said, if I'm asked to do a job, I'm going to do it the best that I can. Because I'm an actor, I'm hired to tell a story. And you can't be ashamed of who you're offending. And, you know, if someone doesn't like your casting, then, hey, I'm going to do the best job that I can. But other than that, I mean, the backlash from how gory it was, the only really negative thing that I saw, I mean, I didn't receive any backlash. I just saw a lot of people not responding negatively to it because, you know, a lot of people watch the show with their kids, which, you know, obviously that's very inappropriate. That's really the only negative thing I saw of how gory it was. But I mean, understandably, I can understand the gore part of it because that has to do something to Seven, and sort of motivate her to go and become this type of character that she has become. I mean, she has become cold-blooded, and you know, for that to happen, I mean, you have to see some stuff and really have some post-traumatic stress to have that affect you as a character. So,
And I think that, you know, because we've followed things so closely, podcasting, getting lots of feedback from listeners. I mean, it was, I think it was a very divided opinion and pretty controversial, that scene, I think, because I think some said, like, okay, you didn't need to show, you know, exactly what was happening in the, in this gory way. It could have just been implied. But I've said on this show before, I think it's actually appropriate for Seven's motivation. And also, you need to see in a way that these ex-Borg are being basically treated as less than sentient beings. They're just like there for parts, and that kind of emphasizes it. But I can totally see if someone's not used to it, or they didn't want to see something like that in Star Trek, that might bother them. But I do have to say, like, I think regardless of whether someone likes that it was done that way or not, I think part of the reason that there was like a strong reaction on both sides of it is that it was so well done, and that it just felt so believable, and you like really felt like the difficulty and the trauma and all of that. So I think it's a testament to everyone that worked on that scene, yourself included, that it came across so powerfully, that it actually had, because I think the worst thing that can happen is like you have a scene or an episode and people are like, eh, whatever, right? Like, but if you have something that's a really strong reaction, even if it's some people love it and some people have like a really big problem with it, it means that it's touched a chord, or that it's powerful in some way, right?
Yeah. Like if you're offending someone in the way you tell a story, you're probably telling a good story.
Yes.
So, I mean, like it, yeah, it's going to be gory, but again, if it looks real, then we did our jobs, I guess, is the way to put it.
I feel like that was kind of the point of it, just to really bring home like exactly how these people were being treated, like as not as people, really.
Right. And that's one of the things that I had a lot of discussions with the producers, you know, leading up to it, was that we want people to see that the Borg are victims here. Like, yeah, the Borg are, you know, these beings who are, you know, ruthless. But they are, like, the people who become the Borg are victims. And if the people who have gotten out of the collective, you're going to, you know, harvest them for parts, they're still victims of, you know, going into the Borg, and now they're out and people want them for their Borg parts now. So, we really recognize them as being the victims. And that's what everyone was trying to, you know, was trying to come across with the way that we were telling Picard. It's a new way of looking at the Borg, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Although there are some hints of that in some places, like Hugh's original storyline in The Next Generation, but for the most part, you know, you're not seeing them as much as victims until Picard, but I think that came across really well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have another listener question from the Babel Conference from Joshua DeVries, who says, I'm curious if when creating the character, he came up with a personal backstory for Icheb's Starfleet career beyond what we learned about him in the episode. So, you know, his career in Starfleet after Voyager ended and before the scene in the episode.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, the only research I've done was watching the previous Voyager episodes, and I just know that that Icheb's main goal was to, you know, join Starfleet. So the sort of backstory that I came up with myself has been, you know, we made it to Starfleet and passed, you know, I have this amazing job and everything, you know, I'm helping people and basically living my life in, a Kirk kind of way. And, So essentially that's the sort of, it was such a small part. So that was just the motivation that I had for myself, is that I'm this character this Kirk motivated type character and got caught and tortured. I mean, that's all that I could really put to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. That's an interesting way to see it. Almost like, you know, it's his dream to be in Starfleet, to be of the best help that, mm-hmm. that he can be. And almost like he's trying to be a hero to others, but he gets caught in this tragic
right.
situation.
Uh-huh. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Just always, yeah. Okay. Always trying to help out others. And then, you know, there is so much evil out in the world that the evil caught up with you. Yeah.
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 All right. So then one other question from our listeners, from Ellen Froelich-Menning. Does he have any additional acting work in the pipeline? And is it possible that any of it is for a different character in any Star Trek? You probably can't tell us.
Yeah, I would love. Yeah. I mean, if I could tell you each of was coming back, I would. I mean, I don't know anything yet. That's me keeping my fingers crossed. But other acting credits in the pipeline, with this whole quarantine thing coming down, I was out there. Mm-hmm. It was pretty big pilot season for me over here. I guess what Good. They call it, January through March is usually pilot season when new shows are coming out. And I was out auditioning quite a bit, and then, everything sort of, you know, froze and shut down. So, with new screen credits coming to fruition, nothing as of yet. But what's going on for me is keeping myself busy and acting wise. Where I live, I actually live above a theater. I live in a studio apartment above a theater, and I love acting. Yeah, I know, it's an actor's dream.
Yeah.
So I act on stage quite a bit, and I do a lot of writing and plays just to get out on the stage and work that acting muscle and exercise that as much as possible. So I do a lot of theater work over here at Beverly Hills Playhouse is the name of the company, and we do a lot of shows over here. So if you enjoy a theater session, come on over and see a show at Beverly Hills Playhouse.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Okay, nice. Listeners that live near that, once everything, you know, once we can be within six feet of each other again.
You know,
yeah, exactly. Once there's
yeah, wonderful. Yeah. So Casey, actually getting back to the scene that you did in Stardust City Rag, one thing that I'm curious about is, so that's an episode that was written by Kirsten Beyer, mm-hmm. Who's written some Voyager novels and is a co-creator on Picard and mm-hmm. producer and all of that. I'm a big fan of her novels that she's done, which take place after Voyager. Mm-hmm. But so I'm just curious, because I'm not sure how this might work. But was there any, you know, interaction that you would have with someone who would write the episode, or producers, or anything like that? Or was it just strictly, you know, the director Jonathan Frakes is giving you, like, who did you interact with besides, you know, the director and Jerry Ryan?
I was interacting with Jonathan. I didn't meet Kirsten. I'm sure she was there on set that day, and she probably, because Jonathan is so, you know, he's a showman, and he, you know, he was directing that day, and, you know, giving out, you know, everyone listening to Jonathan, she was probably talking in his ear how she wanted things, and he would tell that to everybody else. But I was mostly working with Jonathan and Jerry that day. Yeah, those are my two point people.
Makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting to know. I'm just curious about that.
What was the most surprising moment for you while you were shooting the scene?
The most surprising moment for me. Well, how they do the phaser blast.
Oh.
I mean,
of course.
Tell us about that.
Surprising moment. That's the most curious moment I had, because I knew what was coming. I mean, they explained, you know, your eye's going to be missing and all this. So, I mean, it's very surprising when you watch it. But when I was making it, there wasn't really any surprises. But how they did the phaser blast is pretty cool. They put a big LED strip above the frame, and Jonathan yelled "bang," and the light would go off, and it would flash and make it seem like there was a big phaser blast. Yeah,
that's really cool.
So that was pretty cool. Yeah, yeah, movie magic.
I had no idea. Yeah, yeah.
I had no idea, and then I saw that, and I was like, huh, okay.
Wow, that's that's very cool. Yeah. So, I mean, maybe, I don't know if you've talked about this already when we were talking about things at the beginning, but do you have favorite experiences in acting outside of Star Trek?
Favorite experiences in acting outside of Star Trek? I was thinking about this earlier. Experiences, I mean, just seeing how small the business actually is, because it was pretty funny. When I was working on Star Trek, I was the sound guy who was putting the microphone on me and everything, just to record the sound. A month prior to shooting Star Trek, I was working on an episode of NCIS LA, where I had a guest star on that, where I played a bad guy. And I noticed it was the same sound guy I got really close with him on NCIS LA because I was wearing this mask during this robbery scene and he had to rig this mic in a certain way. So I had a nice conversation with him. And then I'm very familiar with faces. So I was noticing him putting the mic on me again. I was like, "Hey, didn't you, you did the sound on NCIS LA, right?" He's like, "Yeah." And he's like, "You look familiar." And I was like, "Yeah, I was in this episode and yada, yada, yada." And we got to talking and yeah. So it was really cool to see how small the industry actually is out here. And I think his name is, I actually just went and looked it up. His name is David Raymond was his name. So shout out to David Raymond.
All right.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Well, once this comes out, you'll have to send it to him so he can listen.
For sure.
But that's awesome. But I mean, it is something that people forget a lot of times when they're watching a show, that there are so many people behind the camera that are helping to make it happen. And that often gets forgotten.
Absolutely. Yeah. Seeing all the people working on the show there was a lot of people because we were up on the studio lot and then getting bused down to the actual, when we shot that scene, we were in an old BMW like showroom that they blacked out the windows and everything.
Cool.
Really?
Yeah. In Santa Clarita. So that was that was really cool. Just seeing everybody behind the scenes from the bussers to, you know, all the grips and everything. There's so many people that put in such hard work to see what, you know, this comes out to be. And it was really cool.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And I think we really appreciate all the work that everybody does to put together the show, because it just, you know, looks and sounds and feels amazing. So I know there's so much work that goes into making that possible.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So I have a question that I like to ask, and it's a little bit of a cocktail party style question, but I think it's an interesting one. What series or movie, past or present, would you most like to be involved in or to have been involved in? And I'm talking the entirety of filmed everything.
Okay. All right. That's a very complex. Okay. So I have a couple of different categories of favorite movies.
Oh, please. Yeah.
Okay. So my favorite movie of all time, has to be Rebel Without a Cause. I mean, James Dean,
classic,
all time classic, you know, so just that's my favorite movie all time. My all time favorite artistic type movie, is a film by Derek C. in France, and it's called A Place Beyond the Pines. Ryan Gosling, Bradley Cooper. Just the way that film is written, it's written in three parts like a play, and just each act is so amazing, so incredibly acted. And the way Derek C. in France is a filmmaker is he's so naturalistic with it. And yeah, I could watch that movie over and over. If I was on a deserted island and I had Place Beyond the Pines, I would be set, you know? A movie I would love to be involved in, anything in the Marvel universe.
Oh,
I mean,
there you go.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge Captain America fan, and just anything with a classic character like that would be, you know, unreal to be involved in.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, if any of our listeners work for Disney or Marvel or any of that, you know who to go to.
Yeah, hit up my agent, you know.
Yes.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, Casey, what do you like to do outside of acting? Any hobbies or interests? I'm sure you have some free time that maybe you're doing with some hobbies and interests.
Oh, yeah. Right now, it's just me and my dog hanging out up in my apartment right now. So,
what's your dog's name?
Yeah, I got a little... My dog's name is Belle, like the princess, you know, from Beauty and the Beast. And she's a little Chihuahua mix with a German Shepherd, I believe. So it's very, cool looking dog. Yeah. So, yeah, she's fun to hang out with. She's about 8 months old right now. So we're puppy training right now. But other than that, hobbies include, writing, reading. I love reading. And again, you know, getting out, playing sports with my friends. You know, I played football in college, anything, tossing around a pigskin, you know, out, staying healthy, exercising, anything that gets me outside. I love doing.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. Great. I actually have two follow-up questions to what you've just said.
Yeah.
So you said writing, like what kinds of things do you like to write?
Yeah. So, anything from sketch comedy. I had a channel with my friends, on YouTube called Pizza for Breakfast. And we wrote we made videos, but very sporadically, like we would go months without making a video and then come back. So we would write, funny sketches for better ridiculous, like our best sketch show is called When the Purge Ends. It's kind of a spoof of off the Purge movie. Like whenever the Purge ends, these guys about to kill somebody and then the horn goes off. It's like, hey, what happens then? So, so a funny sketch like that. So anywhere from funny sketch comedies to dramatic plays. Yeah.
Oh, hold on, Casey. So I looked this up on YouTube, right. Pizza for Breakfast. Right. Am I looking at the right thing that has 30,000 subscribers?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that's incredible.
Right. Yeah. It's been a while since we put out a video, but yeah, that video, When the Purge Ends, I think it was like the number two trending video on Reddit for a while. And that's what got us, a lot of subscribers.
I see it has 12 million views on YouTube.
Yeah.
Wow, Casey. And by the way, you now have, whatever it is, 30,901 or something. Yeah. I just subscribed.
Well, thank you. Check I appreciate it out.
That. Wow, I'm impressed. Yeah. Very cool. So then you talked about reading. So are there things that you are reading lately that are interesting or, you know, favorite?
I read
short stories or something.
Anything that is on I've been flying a lot recently. Well, not now, but like before the whole pandemic happened, I was traveling a lot. And so anything that's on an airport bookstore shelf is what I like to get. Like the two books that I've recently finished is American Assassin by Vince Flynn, which they made a movie out with Dylan O'Brien and Michael Keaton, I believe. And the book was great. The movie, but the book was fantastic.
Usually how
that
goes.
And then before that was a book called The Light Between the Oceans, which is it's a period piece post-World War I. Love story. And they made a movie with Derek Cianfrance as the director. So I saw that book on the shelf and I had to read it. And yeah, it's incredible. So I'm a novelist. I've, yes. Yeah.
I'm glad that you read a lot. Yeah. I do as well. Yeah. It's mostly Star Trek novels these days, so I don't know if it'll happen. I don't have any knowledge or anything, but you know, sometimes with the shows that come out, they'll do novels that have, you know, backstory about characters. Yeah. I'd love to see, you know, a novel that has, you know, Icheb in Starfleet on some adventure or something like that. That would be cool.
Yeah. I mean, even watching this episode, that's all, a lot of what I read of a lot of people's response to it was what are the adventures that Seven of Nine and Icheb had, you know? They had this great relationship and we only got to see the end of it, from this time from Voyager to Picard.
Yeah.
So it seems like they had a lot of,
because I mean, I think they had some closeness in Voyager, but it must've gotten closer in the time after that, because Seven is saying my child, right? I mean, that's a very, very close kind of relationship.
Right.
So it'd be, really interesting. I don't know, novel, comic or something would be cool.
Yeah.
Just love to.
Yeah. Just, I think, you know, they're connected like mother and son are always connected. Seven has Icheb's cortical node, so they'll always be connected. You know,
yeah.
So, yeah.
That's a great pull that you just got from that Voyager episode.
You know,
which ties. Yeah,
it's funny because I was reading the script, and when the chop doc said, "Where's your cortical node, buddy?" I was able to go, "Oh, 7 of 9 has that." And like the very next second, 7 of 9 comes in. So it was like a little hint that, "Hey, look who's coming."
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. But no, that was I'm sure it was Kirsten Beyer that put that in because she's so familiar with Voyager, but. Yeah, very nice. Okay, thank you for indulging me. I'm always curious what people are writing and reading.
Yeah, I just love to hear about that.
Yeah, have you done other, you know, like interviews on podcasts or anything?
So this is my first Star Trek one. I have it's funny. I used to work in a restaurant with this guy who has his own
A shop
company. And he has his own podcast. It's called Fanbase Press. And immediately when I got cast as Echim, I texted him and I was like, "Brian, I got cast on Star Trek." And he's like, "Gotta have you on the podcast." So he's gonna have me on Sunday.
Oh, nice. Sorry, what was that one called again?
It's called Fanbase Press.
Okay. I'll have to check that out because I'm interested in hearing this other interview.
All right. Well, we have very much appreciated that you've been here for these questions, this interview. So tell us about any current or upcoming work that you'd like to let our listeners know about.
Well, again, if you want to go subscribe to Pizza for Breakfast on YouTube, hey, you go have yourself a nice little laugh on YouTube. Other than that, all that I'm working on right now, we have a production company at the Beverly Hills Playhouse called Crimson Square Theater Company. And we just put out plays in Los Angeles. I mean, the theater scene here in Los Angeles is nothing in comparison to New York, but we try to put out plays on a level of show that you would see on a Broadway show. So really just, you know, coming out here and putting on shows. So if you're ever in the LA area and you want to do some research on the Beverly Hills Playhouse, come out and see a show. That's all I got. Sounds wonderful.
And last but not least, should anyone want to talk to you, where can our listeners find you online?
Yes, you can find me on Instagram at CaseyKing1. And then my Twitter is RealKingCasey.
Ah. All right.
Oh, nice. Yeah. And the one for Instagram, is that the number one?
Yes, the symbol one. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, excellent. It's just been a real pleasure having you on. I know that it was just one scene, but I feel like we got to learn a lot about what it took to, I mean, you know, we forget sometimes, you know, maybe it's a 5-minute scene or something like that, but there's a lot that goes into it and a lot that we're fascinated by to learn about because we're not on the set ourselves.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We wish we could be.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we really appreciate you, you know, going into detail and answering, you know, our questions and our listeners' questions today.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, that was the one thing that Jonathan said. He said, "Hey, this is a small scene. It's one scene, but it's going to be very powerful." So that's what we were shooting
for. I mean, he was absolutely correct. It was very powerful, and I have to say, it was probably one of the scenes, not only in Star Trek Picard, but in all of Star Trek, that I think generated like the most like conversation, and people will be talking about for a long time, whether you know they're into it or not. I mean, that made an impact for sure. Nobody's going to forget about that.
Yeah.
You can feel good about that.
Yeah. Well, made an impact. So did the job.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Thanks
again for joining
us. Absolutely, Justin. Thank you so much for having me. And Chrissy, it was a pleasure.
Yes. Thank you so much. We appreciate your time. And your acting.
Yeah, thank you.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been great interviewing Casey King today, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here's what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Orb.
But of all the Section 31 that we're getting in New Trek, this feels the most legitimate. This feels like the Section 31 that we know from Deep Space Nine, and it doesn't feel like, oh, we're just going back to the well again, because, you know, even Iris said, you know, I know they've used it in the movies, but we created this.
Earl Grey.
Nope, still no clue. It's going to, I'm going to kick myself when I get it.
Yeah, tell us, Jim.
Kirsten Dunst.
Oh my gosh, of course.
I hate the universe.
Oh my gosh, I knew that. What's wrong with us?
The best Loxana performance in all seven seasons, in my opinion.
Literary Treks.
If this were an episode of Voyager, and I actually think this book would make an interesting episode of Voyager, and like we kind of hinted at, maybe it's very much like an episode of Voyager that we'll talk about. I don't think it would have been called Seven of Nine, right?
No. No, it would have to have like a one-word title to fit in with most of the other Voyager episodes, so you can't really remember which one it's about.
Yeah, it would just be called Seven. That's what it would be.
To the journey!
She did actually mean what she said in the back in the space just before they die. I don't know, I just kind of like it. It's just
I'm going to tell you I love you just before I die. Not a minute sooner.
It's like, at least I don't have to deal with the ramifications if I'm dead. Well, that backfired.
Or maybe she was just like, at least I don't have to hear him not say it if we're going to die.
So what you're saying is next time that we ask someone to marry them, or anyone who asks someone to marry them, they should do it on death's door of like some kind of crazy adventure, like jumping off a bungee jump.
Yes, you're in the middle of being eaten by a shark or something.
I love you, gobble, gobble, gobble.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button and Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop Apple Podcasts app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show.
And if you're not an Apple user like me, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, and in most third-party apps. And you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link and put it in your favorite podcast app.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on Picard, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
And if you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select the line. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter and Instagram at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So, Justin, where can people contact you when you're not asking people what they're currently reading?
Oh, I love to ask people what they're currently reading.
Me too.
By the way, you know, you can comment. If you've gotten this far into this episode, you can comment on the Casey King interview, or you can just drop us a comment about what you're reading now, Star Trek or otherwise. We'd love to hear about it. Why not? Let's see. What am I reading right now? I'm reading... I just finished up the Voyager novel, Seven of Nine. It's very appropriate.
Because
it's going to be covered on Literary Treks, well, as we're recording here in a couple days, but it's probably in the past by the time this comes out.
just look to the Literary Treks feed. You're good.
Yeah. So, anyway, what are you reading now, Chrissy? Are you reading anything?
I just finished Eric Foner's new book called The Second Founding, talking about the importance of the Reconstruction Amendments, the 13th, 14th, and 15th.
Those are very important amendments.
The very important ones. And if you've not read Foner, you got to read Eric Foner if you're interested in American history at all. He is the voice on Reconstruction. It just came out.
I love American history, so I should probably check it out.
Oh, yeah, it's very good. I think it came out 3-4 months ago or something. I didn't get a chance to touch it until recently. But and then I got to integrate all sorts of good information into my lectures for next term. So
nice.
And I'm still rereading the post-Nemesis novels. I just started Brinkmanship.
Is that part of the fall?
It's right before. It's Typhon Pact. Typhon Pact, yep.
Those are great novels.
Oh, they are. Yeah.
All right, listeners. Well, this has been Literary Treks and Literary Non-Treks. So yes. You asked me where people can contact me. I guess I should get to that.
I did.
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. And I put my reviews of Star Trek novels about once a week. So you can look forward to that there. And you can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Chrissy, where can people contact you when you're not wondering what it would be like to be a fly on the wall of a Star Trek set and to see so many amazing people working on Star Trek? You know what? Like, when we interview these people, I feel like I am so jealous of you guys because you get to be there doing it. But, of course, it's long hours and difficult work and you have to scream your head off sometimes. So, but anyway, when you're not thinking about that, Chrissy, where can people contact you?
Oh, I have thought about that. Yes, of course. So, in addition to here on the line, of course, people can find me in the Babel Conference and on Twitter at The Goddess Livia. That's THEGODDESSLIVIA. And you can also follow my work as an historian by liking the Facebook page. My fellow historian partner and I run History with the Zilagis, and that's S-Z-I-L-A-G-Y-I-S. And there we post about our historical research, and that includes my blog and short podcast, Ancient Aliens is BS, where I go episode by episode debunking the History Channel series.
If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
And we'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producer, Norman Lau. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially The Line. And listeners, if you want to hear your name at this moment, you can get on Patreon and support The Line yourself.
Yes, we'd very much appreciate it.
So join us next time for another episode of The Line.
Things are only impossible until they're not.
It is possible to commit no mistakes and still lose. That is not a weakness. That is life.
And get Casey King in a Marvel movie.
Yes.